in 2 weeks when we see each other, or in 4 weeks when we see each other, but we can talk about whatever feels important to you. So I think that is a way that I think, you know, at the Indigenous Student Center, we're given permission to, or allowed to, work really differently from some other places where there might be a more focus on solutions. Mm. Or like, you came in because you have low mood, we'll talk about that for 4 to 6 sessions, and then, you know, sort of be on your way kind of idea. So I don't sort of try to nail people down. Mm-hmm. So whatever it might be that they come in with, and so I say that very clearly, like, yeah, we can talk about whatever feels important to you on any day that you come in. I don't have this planned out. So, and sometimes, you know, some people, I think that's kind of scary because they want like maybe more structure, but I think I do my best to sort of convey, like, this is a, you know, kind of an unusual situation we find ourselves in here, like the two of us who don't really know each other very well, talking about things that are very, very close to your heart and that are very hard. And so we're going to do our best to just sort of figure out who each other is and how mm-hmm. we can work together.
Yeah.
So those are some of the things that I do to really sort of step away from that role as expert, or that somehow I know better than they do, because I literally don't.
Yeah, it's like, it sounds like when you were talking, this image came to mm-hmm. me, like opening different windows. Mm-hmm. Okay, today mm-hmm. let this air come into this room. Mm-hmm. We will talk about it. But maybe in 2 weeks, even if that window is open, then there is another new window mm-hmm. that we're going to open mm-hmm. and chat about mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. So it feels that it's really spaciousness, right? Like, it creates a spaciousness where mm-hmm. it's not, something happened to me within these 2 weeks, but I cannot talk mm-hmm. about it mm-hmm. with Tano, because then we're supposed to talk about this mm-hmm. other thing, right? Mm-hmm. So then mm-hmm. that creates, no, thank you so much, because I feel that sometimes listeners will be curious, what is this thing about being trauma-informed, mm-hmm. right? Not everybody will have that language or understand yeah. what it is. Mm-hmm. So then it's the way that you explain it is mm-hmm. it's really simple, mm-hmm. easy for people to mm-hmm. understand. Mm-hmm. Have you seen this where what practices either personal or like cultural or creative or spiritual you have seen as a counselor or even as a person, as a whole mm-hmm. human, be especially powerful in supporting healing from sexualized violence?
Yeah.
That are outside, as we, mm-hmm. As you were mentioning, of maybe just the model that many people think that's the only one that will work, that is counseling.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I could give like one answer to that. I think for every person, it might look a little bit different. I mean, I guess at the core of it, in terms of like, who I am as a person and how I practice as a you know, somebody there to support others, is really to just sort of see like what, like, are there any sort of kernels or seeds of like what has worked for you before, and like, let's work on that. I think it is deeply relational as mm-hmm. well. So, and sometimes as a therapist, you know, you might have people coming to you where you're the only person that they have sort of honest conversation with or hard conversation with, and that's okay. But as long as we sort of know we're moving in a direction of like, let's do something here between us that you can actually use out there, it's sort mm-hmm. of like the language yeah. I often use, like that idea of like building skill here or doing things that are hard and vulnerable here first, because mm-hmm. you know, after we've built relationship, it feels safe enough to do that, and then just seeing how that feels and learning to manage what that might bring up, those kinds of things. So I guess deeply relational is sort of like where I would go in terms of like, I don't know if that's a practice, but mm-hmm. something to just sort of keep paying attention to, like, how do we know when we trust people, how do we know, like, what cues can I look for if somebody might be trustworthy, right? And just sort of really talking about it concretely and just mm-hmm. sort of naming that, But just that idea of building relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yes, with and very yes, as you say, very individual cases, yeah, right? Yeah. Like for some people will be like, oh, I have noticed that when I paint, you know, I feel calmer in my body, or I don't know, I embody this type of feeling at that moment.
Yeah.
Or when I go, I have noticed that my walks to nature every week are bringing these new things that I didn't know that I will find there.
Yeah.
So yes,
I think people often don't give themselves and like enough credit for like how they actually do take care of themselves. Like often people will say like, there's nothing, I don't do anything, but really like if we just sort of have some conversation, I guess I see that as part of my work is to say like, wait a second, like there's this thing that you do, or sometimes even in session, like you can notice things, how people are like able to soothe themselves in their bodies, right? It's like, I'm just, you know, I can see that something is going on for you and that this is how you're managing it, right? Like, so it's sort of like a bit of a puzzle sometimes, but just to sort of help people see, or to just ask some really good questions, but to sort of there are things that all of us do, you know, and to sort of have that, you know, really holding that place of like non-judgment, which I think is, you know, something I learned early on in terms of like from a very Western perspective, like that sort of Rogerian idea of like, you know, being with people and that non-judgmental stance. So like, I don't really care if it's good or bad, like let's just sort of see how is it that you've managed till now, like what are the things that you do.
And I'm talking about this like that this is a very individual approach, right? Do you have any examples that you would like to share on how you have seen that those connections to the land or to the language or to their roots or to a specific medicines or ceremonies have provide some healing to the folks that you work with?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think that's a really complicated question because we have folks who come from like all across the sort of spectrum of connection or like whatever that might mean. So I think for some folks that is definitely something they feel very connected to and have access to. And then there's a lot of folks who don't. And so then what does that look like, right? When somebody doesn't have access to their community that they ancestrally come from, or they don't have access to a specific protocol or ceremony, right? So it's sort of working with like all of the above, but just figuring out what might feel important about that specific thing, or like what is the thing that you think that might give you, and just figuring out ways that we can sort of work around that. Or provide that in different ways. So I think it depends. I mean, I was not, you know, I definitely have an awareness of, but I wasn't raised to be a healer in like the traditional sense. So I don't even pretend that that's what I'm going to offer.
Right? Yeah.
But sort of like an understanding of, and it definitely sort of in support of, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. To find ways to reconnect or connect that will help that person.
Yeah.
To, yes.
Yeah. But that's a really sort of loaded question, right? Because people come. So many of our Indigenous folks have been disconnected, not through any choice of their own, but just through, you know, the sort of history of how things have worked here in Canada.
Yeah, what colonialism
often
did.
Often people don't even know where they're from. It is a real privilege that I know where I'm from and who my family is and where we have been for thousands and thousands of years, right? Like, that's not everybody's story. So it's that and then everything in between to the other
Yes,
side.
And you're right. Like, that could be... of course, I was not thinking like you as a counselor saying like let's find the medicines.
Right. Or,
because that will be that could be of course really triggering for folks like
and well, a bit first essentializing, right?
That, yes, like yes, exactly. Like I don't know, and then And maybe my lineage or my family didn't have any of mm-hmm. those mm-hmm. Connections or mm-hmm. that we know. I was just thinking about how the land without talking sometimes, mm-hmm. Right? Offers so much abundance and mm-hmm. care.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
Just walking in a park, even in a park, absolutely. Even in this mm-hmm. urban space,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
It is, it creates a totally different, it decenters you
yeah.
from many
yeah.
of,
yeah.
like,
yeah,
the stories that sometimes.
For sure. I guess it is sort of like that idea of moving away from, like, ceremony is a very specific thing that has to happen in a specific place mm-hmm. and sort of broadening that into yeah. being, like, ceremony that can actually happen anywhere. I mean, that is something I think I talk to a lot of the people I work with about, like, that idea of, like, going to water, mm-hmm. like, yeah, walking sort of on the beach or being around green space, like those kinds of things, right? So sort of knowing there's flexibility in what that can look like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we are about to end. I cannot believe. So, wow, this conversation has been really rich in many mm-hmm. ways, and mm-hmm. you have been sharing really good lights for me to reflect as a settler in this mm-hmm. land. So if healing, we start this series thinking if healing were truly centered in our culture,
mm-hmm.
What do you imagine will feel different at work, in mm-hmm. schools, in institutions, in our daily lives, in our relationships?
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. And I guess, Paola, I don't even really know what that means, like, if we're going to center our culture. I mean, I guess it sort of always comes back to, I was thinking when we were talking about ceremony, too, like, it's sort of like that idea of, you know, culture can mean lots of things, like the clothes we wear, the food we eat, the people we have in our lives. But sort of thinking of that idea of belonging and where do we belong or where do we feel like we belong or where don't we feel like we belong. So I would sort of maybe go along those lines in terms of, like, if we're to center where is it that we belong, and, like, maybe some spaces need some work and maybe some other spaces are already really working well mm-hmm. But, like, what does that look like, right? So I mean, I guess also I would say, like, this idea of contextualizing our experience would also be important, like, so centering that idea that it's not me, myself, that is the problem, but that there is a lot that comes behind me that I'm holding and that we are all holding. So that idea as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just sort of that idea, you know, maybe there are some, like, cultural values that are helpful. I mean, I think at the ISC, we sort of work with those all the time, like that idea of reciprocity, of humility, of respect, right? Like, so we sort of, you know, operate with some of those ideas as well. And I think especially, like, the reciprocity of, like, it's a give and take, and it doesn't mean things are always going to be equal, but sort of mm-hmm. like that idea of, like, how is it that we give to each other and what can we offer and also sort of receive, right?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, to build, I mean, I see reciprocity as building a relationship mm-hmm. with another person,
yeah.
not in terms of equality mm-hmm. that is going to be the same, like that I will cook this dinner for you today and then you need mm-hmm. to cook a dinner for me next day.
No
mm-hmm. but it's about building that care, that mm-hmm. connection, like yeah. I'm here, you're there, mm-hmm. we're walking together mm-hmm. in this, right? Mm-hmm. And then some days I can offer this dinner that I cook mm-hmm. for you. Some other times it will be like, if you call me, I will be here to listen.
Yeah.
But it's not, it doesn't need to be exactly the same. It's just yeah. like weaving something, like this connection that is evolving
totally.
All the time.
Yeah. And a contextualizing of yes. like where we come from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So thank you, Daniel, for this conversation. And, I really appreciate that you say yes to us, and So I wanted to thank you for mm-hmm. your time and your words today. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to thank you to everyone listening. Mm-hmm. And remember that healing isn't something that we carry alone, mm-hmm. but it grows through community and care. And thank you for joining us for Healing Together, a special podcast created in the context of SFU Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And we hope these conversations spark reflection and connection. And as an African American educator, embodiment coach, and conflict facilitator, Prentice Hemphill reminds us to ask, what would it mean to center healing in everything that we create? Until next time, and take care of one another. This project was made possible through the guidance, technical support, and generous hosting of CJSF 90.1 FM. We wish to recognize the assistance offered by CJSF volunteers, and our gratitude also goes to Duane Woods at the SFU Center for Educational Excellence for editing and episode transcription. If you or someone you know in the SFU community has been impacted by sexualized violence, please reach out to the SVSPO at our website, www.sfu.ca/sexual-violence. To learn more about our events and resources, you can follow us on Instagram at sfu.svspo. Thank you for being part of this conversation and for joining us in community.
Diverse, independent, yours. You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University on Burnaby Mountain.
Reporting from Vancouver, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. The cold afternoon rain had little effect on the crowd of over 800 that gathered outside of Hootsuite headquarters in Vancouver, BC. Since it became widely known that the Vancouver-based tech company Hootsuite had a contract with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, the company's been facing increasing public scrutiny, which led to a public protest outside of the Hootsuite HQ on Friday, January 30th. This protest comes during Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, in the United States' ongoing immigration crackdown, which has resulted in increased state violence and arrests in states such as Minnesota, which recently had two separate killings of protesters by ICE officers caught on video. CJSF went down to the rally, where those in attendance were demanding that Hootsuite terminate its contract and all relations with ICE. We spoke with some people outside the Hootsuite HQ about the significance of this protest for them.
I'm here because my grandfather was a prisoner of war in World War II, so he was fighting fascism back in the day, and I see the effect that it's had on my family in terms of generational trauma and how it affected my country. An entire generation of young men went to war and many of them did not come home, and I would hate for that to happen again. And we're seeing the USA play by the same playbook as what Nazi Germany did, and Hootsuite is complicit in that. And we all need to stand up, and now is the time to stand up. So it's really important to me that we take a stand.
I guess I'm here to just let the company involved know that this is not an okay business decision, I guess, at like a really concrete, practical sense. That's why I'm here. But in general, I think I agree with the majority, I think, of Canadians who don't agree with what's going on and really feel for everyone, for all our neighbors in the South, we're going through this. Yeah.
For me, it's just like it's a small way of participating. There's obviously other things we can do, literal boycotts of services and things, but it's hard to know all the different avenues, I guess, I would say. And a lot of it is well hidden, and I know there's ways of finding it out, but you know, just with general busyness, it's a small gesture of solidarity of what we can do. And anything that moves against what's going on down there with the administration is a step in the right direction, I think. And yeah, that's why we're here. Pick up the kids, come to the protest.
I think that what's significant about it is that people often view evil acts or bad things as happening really far away from home and kind of absolve themselves of responsibility without realizing that A, it's happening closer to home than you realize, and B, you can do more than you realize. So everyone has access to some level of power and agency, and it's important that we do everything that we can with whatever access we have. So for us, that's showing up and making sure that people know what's happening in our own backyard, and that neutrality only harms the people who are being harmed. It doesn't help anyone else.
Recently elected leader of the BC Green Party, Emily Lowen, was also in attendance, and we were able to speak with her about the importance of this protest, Hootsuite's response to the public criticism they've received, and how the province should address corporations that collaborate with ICE. This includes the Pattison Group, which was slated to sell one of their facilities in the U.S. to ICE, but had pulled away from the deal earlier that day.
I'm here at the Hootsuite headquarters with hundreds of British Columbians to protest their investment in ICE. We saw an incredible victory today with Jim Pattison pulling out of his sale of an ICE facility. And it just shows that people power works, organizing works, and when we can come together as labor unions, as working people and grassroots movements to really force the hand of these massive corporations. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it looks like from what we've heard today, there already has been a bit of a victory even before the next protest at a Pattison facility was supposed to happen, right?
Yeah, so I've shifted the Pattison protest to be more of a public gathering and celebration where we can, you know, discuss what just happened and the next steps. Because we are, I want to see further action from Pattison on this issue. We got a one-sentence press release from them today announcing that they won't go through with the sale. But we do need to see, I think the public needs to see a full disclosure that they don't have any other pending or current sales with DHS or the Trump administration. And so we want to see that sort of transparency, disclosure, and a public commitment to freeze any future action with ICE. Mm-hmm.
Do you think provincially, on a governmental level, anything can be done to address international collaborations such as this that are overall just opposed by the general public?
Mm-hmm. Well, we absolutely need to see provincial review of corporate relationships in the province, nationally. I would love to see more provincial national action on this put forward a clearer policy. And I think also this has surfaced a real issue with monopoly laws in BC and in Canada. You know, Jim Pattison has an effective monopoly on much of our food supply. And so I want to see greater provincial action to break up those monopolies and deliver British Columbians good, nutritious food with public grocery stores.
Okay. Do you have anything to say to Hootsuite?
To the Hootsuite CEO, no. People have flooded the streets today demanding that you cut your contracts with ICE. But given the response, the abhorrent response from your company just days ago, I know that only economic pressure will work. So I'm demanding, encouraging that all of your contracts, whether it be companies and municipalities that do business with you, to end their contracts with Hootsuite until further action is taken.
This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, SFU Burnaby.